Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back to another special edition of the 40 Scenes Fire American Soccer Show. This is the 2019 Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup Championship Final Review Show. We review the finals, of course, between Atlanta United and Minnesota United FC that was held this past Tuesday night on over at Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta, Georgia. And you know what? This was a very good final. It was an excellent final, I thought. You know, some damage done by the visitors on themselves, unfortunately. Questionable situations that did pop up, but overall, I thought it was a great final. And, you know, it's just one of those things where I think we all have to say that this was an excellent final that had best of both sides attacking each other. But unfortunately, in every final, someone had to win and someone had to lose. Atlanta won it, second cup in a couple of weeks, three cups within, two seasons. If you do want to count the Campeones Cup, go right ahead. I'm not going to dampen anyone's spirits in Atlanta, even though to me it's just a glorified, I would say this is the type of tournament that should, with the type of one match cup title thing that should be done during the off season, not during the season. That's just how I feel about it, but I digress. We're not going to worry about that right now. But let's talk about the situation with the Open Cup final. Pardon me. Many of you felt that this final, even though broadcasted on ESPN Plus, that this final should have been broadcasted on one of the two or the three ESPN channels that were available to us, either ESPN number one, ESPN number two, ESPNU, maybe even ESPN News. Instead, the final was broadcasted on ESPN Plus. Now, let me say this. In years past, I would complain about that. I would complain about it, saying, you know, are you delegitimizing this final? Why is it not on national television? Why can't you put it on any of the channels available? Well, the truth of the matter is this. As we all know, streaming is the future for television. We have Apple TV. We have the DirecTV on your smartphones, not just DirecTV in your house. Fox Sports has their apps. ESPN has their app for streaming. And while ESPN, excuse me, has been broadcasting the U.S. Open tennis tournament that's being played in New York City at Flushing Meadows Park in Flushing Meadows, Queens. And as we all know, it's a big major early in the tournament and everything. But I think it's going to start winding down soon. The truth of the matter is this. The final was broadcasted, period. I think what we have to look at right now, in my opinion, we have to look at the situation that's in front of us. And while I understand that, you know, this old proverb is probably not the best way to say anything, but I think right now it kind of fits the narrative, and beggars cannot be choosers. Pardon me. I think we should be just grateful that this tournament was broadcasted through the ability, the streaming, and the technology of ESPN. We have to be grateful that the entire tournament was shown in its entirety from the first match all the way through the end. What we are long day for me, I apologize. But what we have to understand is this is the future of broadcasting. This is the future of technology. The future, while slowly but surely getting there, this is what we have to expect. This is why when you are someone that's out of market and you live, you probably moved from your hometown city, hometown state, and living somewhere else to provide for your family. At the same time, you got a job where you were forced to move out from your hometown and to live somewhere else, and you want to watch basically your team, but you're not able to. And that's why this whole situation has been created, this whole Apple Plus television or ESPN Plus, Fox Sports app, Fox Sports Go app, you know, every single app out there to watch your favorite teams play. And the one thing that I have always been a little upset with, if the finals broadcasted on ESPN or ESPN2 or any of the other channels of ESPN, they don't stay into the presentation of the trophy nor the lifting of the trophy at the end of the final match. Here, through ESPN Plus, you got to watch the beginning, the middle, the end, and then the cup lifting celebration. And in my book, I think that is the best thing that we could see. Do I wish the final was broadcasted on ESPN or any of the regular TV channels of ESPN? Absolutely. But I think what we need to understand very clearly is that the future is coming. The future is bright, as they say. I really believe that this was the right way to go. I know some of you will disagree, and that's fine. We're not here to demand anything. We're not here to say that my way or the highway. I think what we need to do is we need to accept the future of broadcasting. And what we need to do is just say this. If this is what's going to be for the future of the tournament, to have every single match broadcasted in every single round, then that's what needs to be. That's what it has to be. Beggars cannot be choosers. And like I said already, I don't have a problem with it anymore. In the past, I would because, you know, we still consider broadcast television the number one thing going for the sport. I know people would still get upset when you discuss the situations. Why are we not moving on to the MLS match of the week? Why is this thing still being shown? Well, you know, ESPN and Fox Sports and everyone else, you know, if there's going to go over the time restrictions for their broadcasting of the previous sporting event, then that's what they have to do. They have to wait for the whole thing to end. There's nothing you can do or I can do. They have to be, accommodating to the people watching that sporting event that is not soccer. Obviously, it's not right, but the truth is, this is the situation that has to happen. They're trying to be fair to all sides. The people before the soccer, the people during the soccer, and then the people after the soccer. So that's the situation that we have. And as I've said already, I am not upset by it. I'm not bitter about it. I understand it. When you get older and you've been, you know, around the block many, many times, you can understand why there's so much frustration from everyone else. And all you have to tell them is, look, this is what they need to do to pay the bills. And at the same time, this is why these things happen. Remember, everyone, you know, the future, sometimes, you know, it's a rush job. Sometimes, pardon me, sometimes it's a situation where we have no choice. We have to go through the motions. But as I have said many times, but as I've said already, this is the situation that is in front of us. This is why the broadcasters are always looking to stay one step ahead of each other and to embrace the technology that has come for us. Now, I admit there are times, not that I don't embrace the technology, I have, or else I wouldn't have my own smartphone. But I think sometimes what we need to remind ourselves is that while you don't like certain things going on, the truth is there's nothing we can do about it. The show must go on. And as we see what's going to happen down the road, and until we get to that moment where it's going to be an interesting situation, all we can do is just sit back and learn the new stuff and just get ready for whatever comes our way. It's not an answer, that's for sure. But I think what we can definitely say is that we have to get ready for the future when it comes. And when it does come, we just have to be prepared for it. Change is difficult at times. Once you get used to it, everything will be fine. But the one change that I've enjoyed, the one change that I have been fantastic with, is that every single match of every single round in the U.S. Open Cup, from this tournament edition to the next two, the next three, the next four, whatever it is, that every single match of every single round will be broadcasted on ESPN+, or if we ever get an opportunity to get one that will be on ESPN regular, that would even be better. But I'm telling you right now, I've been very excited about what I have seen. I've been very excited about what has been done. And ESPN, in my book, has done an exquisite job. They've been more than exemplary. They've been absolutely unbelievable. They stepped it up and they said, we are going to take this tournament seriously. We know now it needs to be broadcasted in a proper way. And as of right now, we will lead the charge. And everyone can join us for this fun trip that we're going to have. And it's just been absolutely wonderful to see what they have done. It has been absolutely spectacular to see what they have done And I, for one, am very, very happy and very, very excited that ESPN has done the job. And I cannot wait for next season. Next season should be a lot of fun. Next season should be an absolutely fun time as we get ready. And let's get it on. Let's get it on. Let's have some fun. And let's just go out there and see what else ESPN can do to go out and enjoy ourselves. Well, ladies and gentlemen, great show for you tonight as we get ready to talk about this wonderful tournament and all you can say is that this was a lot of fun. This was a lot of fun to watch and enjoy. And as we get ready to talk about those people that were a part of watching all of this, we're going to start off with my good friend over in Minnesota, but currently on the road to watch Minnesota United take on Los Angeles Football Club this weekend, the Labor Day weekend. This man needs no introduction as we are waiting for him to get into the switchboard, and let's see what's going to happen.
Please leave a message after the tone, and I'll return.
And that's not what we wanted. But we are waiting for Bruce McGuire to call in and talk about the fun times. The fun time that he watched. Now, obviously, you don't want to say it's a fun time. But once again, this is going to be a situation because once again, Minnesota United. I thought that they had a good game plan, even though maybe some questionable decisions for the starting 11. But once again, Adrian Heath has to live with who he put in and who he has not put in. And, of course, maybe, I don't know, if that costed him this Open Cup title. But still, though, the situation once again.
Please leave a message after the tone, and I'll.
Situation once again, it's a little bit difficult, but you know, once again, it's kind of tough not to put in Darwin Quintero to start the match. And even though Adrian Heath put him in late after, of course, the second yellow red card to Leonardo Gonzalez Perez, you know, that's a decision I think that might haunt Adrian Heath. But joining me right now, the gentleman who, of course, follows Minnesota United, has been following soccer since the state began it and everything else, including him. It is Bruce McGuire from DeNord. Bruce, welcome. And, you know, tough result for Minnesota United FC, but, you know, let's be honest about it. They came to play. There's nothing to be ashamed about. And, you know, look, they almost had an equalizer maybe two or three times in this match.
By the way, I've been following soccer since the earth was formed. Let's get that established right away. Since it was formed.
That's right. That's my fault. I should have known that.
Here's my analogy I've been using, because they fought like demons in that game. You know, they went for it. You know, they were down 2-0 early, some really stupid mistakes, and they fought so hard to get back into the game and came close. But it almost was like a fighter that hasn't been trained on fighting properly. And if you keep hitting the guy, he keeps getting back up. But is it really fighting? You know, if you just keep getting pounded and you get back up and you just get bloodier and bloodier and you can't actually hit the knockout blow yourself, is that fighting, Daniel? That's my question.
I would say in some respects yes, but I think you're going with no.
Because you get a lot of respect for being the fighter that gets knocked down and won't stay down, keeps getting back up. You get a lot of respect. Everyone loves
right.
you, but are you going to win the championship? I don't think you are.
No.
And I admire the fight. It's awesome. And this year, compared to other years, you have to go back all the way to 2011, 2012, 2013, the last time they showed this kind of fight. And I love it. And as a fan, it doesn't matter if your team is good or bad if you keep getting back up and keep going for it. But there's got to be a time when you want to win. You know, if you want to win it all, I mean.
Absolutely.
And
no, absolutely.
Boy, and Atlanta is so good. And and you also have to think, didn't it look like they let their foot off the gas or something after those two goals and a couple more tries?
It felt like it. It felt like it. But you know what, though? It got worse for them when Leandro Gonzalez Pires not only gets that yellow card for dissent after the foul, because he didn't get booked for the foul. He got booked for the dissent. And then he, you know, being a petulant child, and I'm going to be very kind about that, but he was a petulant child, which got him the second yellow and then the red card afterwards. You know, he's lucky that Ike Opara and Minnesota did not pull off that equalizer in second half stoppage time, or else that match goes into extra time.
Yeah, and they're down. And I mean, boy, Opara and Boxall, the two center backs for Minnesota, gave it everything they had to try and tie that game, you know? Man, those guys tried. And Boxall had a great chance. And I didn't hear anybody in Minnesota complain after, because if you're counting on your center back to be, you know, Mr. Precision up top, you're counting on the wrong guy. And Boxall's not going to sleep for weeks after missing that. You know, he knows. You don't have to tell him that. But it's also not his job. His job is to keep the ball out of the net. And so, hey, he had a chance, he almost did it, and he didn't do it. You can't fault him for that. And
nope.
Opara, you know, Opara did everything he could to try and get free, and you got to give Atlanta credit for just clawing at him and keeping him from getting a really clear look at goal. And even a man down, Atlanta's defense held pretty strong there at the end.
No, it really did. Just another inch or two lower. And we're talking about extra time. I want to ask you this question, though. I want to ask you this question. On the first goal that Minnesota conceded, basically, which was – it's properly called an own goal, and I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah.
My problem with the official scorer – now, I understand Gaspar extended his foot to try and stop the cross. The ball deflected off his foot, and it – you know, it was up in the air for a good amount of time, and it came down. Why is it he gets credit for the own goal when Vito Nemone, who actually touched it last with his left hand, I mean, he swiped at it, got it, but spun it more, and then it bounced on the turf and inside the back post. Why doesn't the goalkeeper get the own goal when he touched it last?
Man, you have Zapruder'd that film, haven't you?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't check it that close. I didn't realize that Manone's tip actually spun it that way.
It did.
Man, wow. Okay. Great question. I don't know.
I watched because, I watched the replay on my computer because it was broadcast on ESPN Plus, not on any of the ESPN regular channels. But, the goal, the camera behind Minnesota's goal in the first half, I mean, he leapt for it. If he missed it, then obviously he missed it, then give it to Gasper. But his hand actually touched the ball. Like, he was trying to wipe it away or swipe it away, but he swiped it and didn't get enough on it, but just enough to some form of a backspin, and the ball bounced right behind him, and then it bounced inside the back post to make it 1-0.
Wow. Yeah.
You can double-check if you want, but that's what I saw.
We've been the people that I know that watch Minnesota United a lot lately, we have been talking about individual players and just the small contributions, because we can all see the big ones, but it's the small ones that often make the difference. And we've talked about Gasper being a first-year professional, and you can see his limitations, but he puts in a great effort, and he's better than anything else they have. So you have to appreciate that, and no one can blame him for that goal. You know, he did whatever he could to try and keep the guy from crossing it, and it ends up, in the back of the net, which was just brutally frustrating. It was the second goal that really is the one that cost Minnesota, where they were already had their heads down from the first goal, and because, hey, everyone knows that if you're going to go to Atlanta and win that game, you've got to be the team that gets the lucky bounce, not them. And because Atlanta's got too great a home field advantage, too many weapons on the bench, and at the time, right now, too much momentum on their side. So when they get the lucky bounce for the first goal, I don't want to say it's not normal, but I understand why somebody's head would drop and then they give up another goal minutes later. And And you end up in that situation where now you have to play catch up for 70 minutes. That's a big ask.
Oh, it really is. And I think what really, Pity Martinez is a great player, of course, but it's tough to see him while you have three defenders around him and he gets that space. If you give him that space, that ball is going to be easy pickings for him to put it in the top shelf. I mean, come on. Those 6 minutes from the 10th minute on till the 16th, 17th minute, that was all Atlanta. That was all Atlanta. And then when Minnesota turned it on, great ball. I thought a great goal from Laud, who made it 2-1, pulled one back. And then you saw what Minnesota was trying to do, and you're thinking to yourself, you know what? Here we go. Minnesota's going to get that equalizer. It was only a question of when, not if.
Yeah, it made for an incredibly, incredibly tense final 40 minutes or so, and so much drama. And both teams had their chances to tie it or push further in the lead, and you can't really argue at that point with how the game ended. You give everyone credit, you all go home, you shake each other's hands, and I think, besides the that you don't win a trophy, most people on both sides ended up pretty happy.
Oh, yeah, I agree. Absolutely.
Except for Darwin. Except for Darwin Quintero.
Well, let me ask you about that, because that was my next question to you. Are you a little miffed that Adrian Heath did not start him, and at the same time, if you weren't going to start Darwin at the beginning of the match, were you a little miffed he did not sub him in right away in the start of the second half? Because I'll be honest with you, but I'm being honest here. I was
expecting
Quintero to start the second half, and then Adrian Heath had to wait till Gonzalez Pires got his second yellow red card to put him in, because I thought that's a complete disservice to a guy like Darwin Quintero, his abilities of attacking and how he puts the ball away. I thought Adrian Heath miscalculated not only not starting him, but not subbing him in right away to start the second half.
It's a matter of who's the most important person in the organization. And anyone who's followed the team for the 3 years knows that Adrian Heath feels he is the most important person in the organization. And therefore, if he doesn't like Darwin's attitude or the way Darwin is doing things, then Darwin's on the bench. It's Heath's way or the highway. And Darwin is now frustrated, and Darwin is now, he's been saying things to his friends and his friends have been putting coded messages on the internet. The night before the game, one of his friends sent a message in Spanish saying this was the first time in the 2 years Darwin has been there that Heath didn't tell them who was starting the next day, the first time it had happened. And you got to think that's because he didn't want, you know, he didn't want to hear 24 hours of Darwin bitching.
Mm-hmm.
And then you wait till the 75th minute to put him in. You have to kind of shrug and there's no real way to understand how or why the team is run the way it is at that point. I don't have logic that tells me that that's the way to do it. That's how I feel.
Yeah.
That just defies logic. I don't get it.
Yeah. No, I don't get it either.
The other thing is mm-hmm. over the 3 years, and I haven't fully verified this, but I talked to a lot of people about it, and none of us could come up with more than one time when Minnesota started in a 4-3-3 that they have won
mm-hmm.
a game.
Mm-hmm.
And they came out in a surprise 4-3-3. They play 4-2-3-1 all year. And a few weeks ago, they went up to Montreal, rotated the squad, put out a 4-3-3, and won it 3-2. But this isn't Montreal. This is Atlanta in Atlanta.
Absolutely.
You leave Darwin. Darwin has had a rough summer. He has not been a contributor. He has not been a big factor. He's been inadequate, and no one will deny that. But he's the leading scorer in the Open Cup too. I mean, sometimes
six
that's
goals.
When a guy. Sometimes you have, you know, sometimes you're not great
mm-hmm.
In the regular season, but you find that Open Cup magic, you know. And
oh, absolutely.
And he's had it. And there were stories that went around right before the Open Cup started that there was a team meeting and they had talked about maybe rotating the squad for the Open Cup, and he stood up and demanded that they go for it. And
that's right.
You know, from what I hear, he's the reason why they got to – it was his drive and his attitude that got them to the final begin with, much less the six goals
yeah.
he scored.
Yep.
And then you leave him on the bench and put him in the 75th minute, and all you can do is really just shrug and wonder why. And there won't be an explanation. No one will explain that.
That's not what the game is at all, isn't it? No.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully that thing changes. All right, so Bruce, listen, have fun in Los Angeles. I know it's a big league match against LAFC. Have fun over there.
Yeah.
And
Sunday night.
Thanks very much for calling in. And listen, good luck next season in the Open Cup. We'll see what happens, okay?
Awesome. Always
awesome.
A pleasure.
As always, take care, Bruce. Enjoy your time over there.
Yep, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bruce McGuire from Denord on Minnesota United FC. As they tried their best to beat Atlanta United, they couldn't do it because, they did beat themselves in the first goal that they allowed, and then a great goal from Pity Martinez, even though they pulled one back. Joining me right now on the Atlanta United side of things, Jason Longshore, 92.9 FM, the game, radio analyst for Atlanta United. Jay, welcome back. Second trophy in a matter of weeks, 3 in 2 years. You know, I got to say, it's still early in the history of Atlanta United, but they're actually putting their money where their mouth is.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that Darren Eales said from day one, is that he wanted to build a winner. And Arthur Blank said it the day the team was announced in 2014, that he wanted to bring championships to Atlanta, and you saw Arthur Blank, you know, in the box and on the field for this one, and it was a big deal to him, just like Campione's Cup was a big deal to him, and MLS Cup last year was a big deal. Atlanta soccer fans are very lucky to have an owner like Arthur, who is invested in putting a quality product on the field and trying to bring championships to the city, and a front office that Arthur has invested in really early on that is looking at the big picture along with the small picture of putting the right pieces together for the manager to choose from. And I thought Frank DeBoer got this one right as well. You know, you look at the schedule Atlanta United's had lately, it hasn't been easy. And he's been able to get this team up game after game after game and push the right buttons to get these wins.
Now, This is what I like about Frank. And this was also mentioned on the broadcast on ESPN Plus from Devin Kerr, who was doing the sideline reporting, was that Frank smelled blood in the water. Frank wanted that third goal. And you know what? That's what I like about DeBoer right now. Not that Tata Martino did not have that in him, even though I think Tata Martino enjoys more beautiful football than maybe Frank does, because I think Frank wants to drive it down their throats. But still, though, he recognized what was going on. He recognized the situation early on after the 16th minute when Pitti put that second ball away. He wanted to knock Minnesota out permanently. I didn't get it, but you saw why he wanted it.
Yeah, Minnesota was on the ropes. And it happens when teams come into this building and concede early. And the first 20, maybe 30 minutes of this match could be the best that I've seen Atlanta United play ever. It was that good. It was that free-flowing. It was that stylish. It was that just flair, quality, the mindset of trying to score 10 goals in 20 minutes. That was where this team was early on. They got two. They weren't able to find that third that DeBoer wanted so bad. And the reason he wanted it is that this team has played a lot of minutes, a lot of intense minutes over the last month to 6 weeks. And it adds up and it catches up to you. And you don't have the legs to play at that level for 90 minutes. You just can't. And there's going to be a letdown. The letdown was early in the second half. And you give up that one goal, and you have to fight more than maybe you hoped that you would have after the way the match started.
And, you know, you're absolutely right about that. And, of course, there's those times where Josef Martínez, you know, I know he wasn't really offside on the second one that he tried to score, but Miram was when he accepted the pass. But still, though,
yes,
when you got a great
second one was definitely off.
Yeah, well, no, second was definitely off. I would say the first one he put in that got wiped out for offside, maybe it was a hair off. I couldn't really tell from the angle. It might have been just a tiny tick off. I don't know. I'll defer that one away.
It was hard to tell, exactly. The second one where we were in the box was right on line with it, and Merrim was a good bit off.
Yeah, he was. But you can tell that Josef Martínez was really trying to get that third goal as much. If he didn't get the first, he was trying to get the third, and it just didn't happen. But it goes to show you how good of a defensive team Minnesota United has been when they don't put the ball in the back of their net. Now, I want to ask your opinion about this. Did you get a chance to watch the rebroadcast through ESPN Plus of the Open Cup final?
Most of it back, yes.
Okay. Did you think the own goal should have been given to Manone? Because I saw from the camera angle behind the goal that I know Gasper deflected the cross, but Manone, he swiped at the ball and he made contact with the ball. And even though the ball did not, like, you know, go left or right, he swiped at it and he put extra spin on it. And then it bounced on the turf and then inside the back of the post, inside the back post.
I think
he should have gotten the goal.
It's tricky. My understanding when I did stats, I did stats for the Atlanta Silverbacks in the North American Soccer League. Technically, it was with the NASL when I did the stats. If the deflection from Gasper is ruled to be, all right, there's no shot there, and there wasn't. It was a cutback cross from Gonzalez Perez. Gasper's touch puts it on goal. Manone's touch doesn't change anything. If Gasper's touch would not have ended up in the back of the net if Manone hadn't touched it, then if Manone touches it, it's the own goal for Vito Manone. So that's kind of the breakdown from a statistical standpoint. If Gasper's touch was ruled to be putting the ball on frame going into the net, and I think it was, then the touch from Manone is just like if you try to make a save and it deflects off of you and goes in.
Right. Yeah, that's what I thought. I mean, I thought, like I said, I saw Manone get a touch on it, and then, you know, spun the ball a little extra on the swipe, and then it just bounced in. But
but
like
if
I
it
said,
was already
you know,
heading in, that wouldn't get the own goal, and that's where they're just trying to judge it.
I don't think it was heading in. I personally felt that Manone, he made the ball spin a little differently,
right?
And that's why it bounced on the turf and inside the back post. That I just I'm gonna stick with that till I'm blue in the face. But other than that, you know, look. Whatever happens, we know it's an own goal. That's not the question. It's just I felt that, you know, last touch was by the keeper. It should be on the keeper, but that's as far as it goes. But Pity Martinez doesn't need any help putting the ball away, you know. I mean, those three defenders around him gave him so much space. And a guy like Pity Martinez does not need extra help with the space to put that type of ball away on a great cross by Justin Miram.
The thing about Pity that I think everyone is starting to come to grips with is, look, we've known he's a special, talented player, and that was obvious if you ever watched him play at River Plate. I think the thing that's coming to the fore now is that he's a player who is better in the big moments, and a player lives for that kind of spot. He's also getting comfortable with his teammates, and I think they're getting comfortable with him. He's not an easy player to immediately step on the field with and understand, because he's one of those special players. You see things that not every player around you does. He's able to play a pass that not everybody around him is, and not everybody expects. I can't tell you how many times I've watched Pity Martinez play a ball first time or play a pass that somehow gets through three, four defenders and no one expects it, and you see the hesitation in stepping to the ball because it's unexpected. Now that hesitation is less. Now players are starting to react quicker, and now players know that he can make magic happen. And if he can put more goals away, which, look, he's not here to be a huge goal scorer, but he's had chances that he hasn't put away, and you've got to bury those. And if he can continue to play at the level that he has over the last month, all the talk about Pity Martinez will go the way of all the talk from 2018 about Ezequiel Barco. Some players hit the ground running in this league. Some need a little more time. And I think we see in general that the skill players, those playmakers, those creators, are the ones who generally need just a little more time to get settled and to build up those relationships with their teammates.
Yep, I definitely agree with you there, and we'll see what happens down the road with this season and the following years. I'm sorry, hold on. Sorry about that. I want to ask you a question about Leandro Gonzalez-Pires. I think he's a fabulous defender. I think he does a great job on the back line, defending well. I know occasionally he has his moments, a little harsh, a little hardness on the tackle. Maybe, you know, gets a little overexcited and stuff like that. Look, I can respect that. But, you know, he nearly costed Atlanta getting an equalizer against them by Minnesota. I mean, even though Minnesota just missed the ball going under the crossbar when it went over it, I thought he should have known better than to, you know, get a second yellow. Okay, fine. You're not happy. You thought that the challenge that he had with the Minnesota player was clean. Gets called for the foul. Gets dissent card. Pardon me. He gets booked for dissent on the first one. And then 3 minutes later, he pulls that off. And that's a yellow card offense. And that's the second one of the game in 3 minutes. And then he's gone. You're down to 10 men for the remainder of the second half of a championship final. I know he's going to get suspended next season, depending on if he's still with Atlanta United in the Open Cup. But still, though, in my opinion, that was immature.
That's the negative with his game, and it comes up sometimes. It's come up less, I think, this season than it has in the past, but it came up again in the final. It's it's a frustrating thing without knowing what was said in the dissent situation. That felt like a quick trigger on the yellow there, unless, of course, he said something special that is going to be getting that quick trigger. The second one, it's a yellow card 9 times out of 10. What was frustrating in this case was Osvaldo Alonso 10, 12 minutes before.
And I'm not disagreeing with you about that.
Yeah, and that's where the line gets difficult in matches, because if that one is not a second yellow and the grab from LGP in Minnesota's half, which is, I mean, an inconsequential play, he shouldn't have made it because you give the referee the opportunity. But when
exactly.
just a few minutes before you have the studs up below the knee that doesn't get a second yellow, and then something that small gets a second yellow, it's annoying. Mm-hmm. LGP needs to handle those better. And he honestly had since the Minnesota game last year, where he picked up 2 yellows in the first half, and the second one was unnecessary in that one completely. It's probably the real drawback to his game, because you take that element away that he runs hot and the engine can overheat sometimes and he sees red. You take that away, he is, if not the best center back in Major League Soccer, he's in the top 5. And his teammate, Miles Robinson, is probably in that conversation with him now. I think he's that good.
He's fantastic.
And I think he's that critical. I think and the two of them together complement each other so well. The thing that Leandro doesn't get enough credit for is how vital he is in possession for this team. And with such a focus on building up play out of the back now, a lot of times it's Gonzalez Pires who makes that decision on, okay, are we going to continue to cycle? Are we going to build up? Am I going to play to Nagby or Remedy short? Or am I going to hit that diagonal and send someone in down the wing? Because he is, since he came into the league, he is among the best field players in the league at completing that long pass. And it's an important element of what Atlanta United does. On the field, outstanding. This stuff is the drawback that holds him back from that truly elite conversation in MLS.
And that's the one thing I agree with about Miles Robinson. I mean, for him to get
Miles
that call up.
Amazing.
Unbelievable what I saw from him. I mean, you see him regularly. I mean, you know, I get to pick and choose whenever I can to watch him. I mean, what he did in that final was unbelievable. The run back defense and to catch up to the attacker was just unreal from what I saw. He deserves his call up for the friendlies between Mexico and Uruguay, you know, after Labor Day weekend. Just absolutely
totally
fantastic player. Absolutely fantastic player.
He's the player who has, I think, developed the most in Major League Soccer over the last 2 years. I saw him last year. You go back, 2017, didn't play very much. You didn't have Atlanta United 2 at that point. He went on loan with the Charleston Battery for a handful of games, and they had two of the best center backs in the league, so there wasn't really any time for him to play. So 17, it was just a lot of training. 18, he played against LAFC early in the season, did well, but you could tell he was a little shaky and a little uncomfortable with the ball at his feet. Played with Atlanta United too, continued to improve there and get touches there. The end of the USL season, Atlanta United too had a number of home games, and they shifted to playing 3 in the back based off the availability of who they had at the time. And Robinson played in the middle of that 3 quite a bit, sometimes on one side of it, but often in the middle, and started to get those touches in build-up play that he just hadn't had a chance to get in matches. And you could see almost every game in the USL better and better and better with his decision-making, with his crispness, with playing quicker, just looking more comfortable with the ball at his feet. The one-on-one defending was always there. The positioning has gotten better too, just with games, to the point that when last year, when you had, I believe it was a suspension, it might have been an injury, against NYC in the second game of the Eastern Conference semifinals at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, Robinson was called upon to start that playoff match. And I remember a lot of people being very worried when that lineup came out. And after calling those Atlanta United 2 games and seeing him week after week after week, just improve. I was like, he can handle this. He's ready. And played well there, and then has been just ever present all season long, closing plays down. He allows his abilities and his confidence that has grown this season is the number one contributor to allowing Atlanta to play in this formation and commit wingback roles to Justin Merrim and Julian Gressel, two players who are not known for their defense. Robinson can clean up things that happen. He can clean up mistakes, and you can commit more numbers forward, and you can play even more aggressively than you thought you could.
Very true. Well, I wanted to ask, and, you know, what Pires just did, he's going to be suspended for next edition in 2020. And, you know, I mean, obviously it's going to be nothing, you know, fourth round probably shows up and that's the end of it. And, you know, just it's all done and dusted, and then he doesn't have to worry about another one until he pulls that off again. But, you know, what are you seeing from the Atlanta 2 pipeline that, you know, maybe some of those players are starting to threaten the senior roster right now?
There's going to be some decisions to make. I don't think you have guys in Atlanta United 2 that are going to step into the first team starting 11 tomorrow. I think you have guys that are probably still maybe a year away from that time, but the depth is growing as the academy gets, you know, year after year of developing and refining what they do. The U14 team from the academy that won the Manchester City Cup out in California last year, or earlier this year, honestly, back in the spring, that's a group that has been in Atlanta United's club system from day one. That's the team that they didn't know anything else, and that's the team that you'll probably see the most impact from in a few years. But the U17 group from last year that is moving up this year, Stephen Glass, the manager for Atlanta United 2, was their manager. So you're starting to see some 16 and 17-year-olds incorporated into Atlanta United 2 right now. A player like Will Riley, for example, who is 16 and plays like he's about 26. He steps on the field, he's organizing, he's talking, he's very confident. He plays the Atlanta brand of possession soccer that they want to build as a central midfielder, one of those holding midfield roles. Riley's one to watch. George Campbell, who was just called into the U20 squad for the United States, who just signed a homegrown deal for next season. He's been kind of a late bloomer, to be honest. I saw him in Generation Adidas play over a year ago, and I was like, he's really raw, but he's really promising as a center back. And I hadn't heard his name before because he's actually converted from playing midfield. That was where he had always been. Hit a growth spurt. Now he's got the size. He's got 20-plus games in the USL Championship under his belt, and he is growing on the ball a lot like Miles went through last year. There's two more center backs in Kendall Edwards and Garrison Tubbs who are starting to break through. Tubbs has been playing a lot lately. So that's three center backs out of the academy that are on the way that are all MLS prospects. Riley is a holding midfielder. You have a few outside backs that are starting to emerge. Jackson Conway is a 17-year-old who signed a USL Championship deal this year and has been just steadily growing both as a player and growing physically. You know, I mean, that's one thing I think we always kind of forget about when you see these 15, 16, 17, and even 18-year-olds, the changes to their body physically that happen over that time, and especially when they're in a professional environment and they're eating right and they're training right, those things take a little time. And it's coming for a guy like Jackson Conway, who looks like, you know, a fairly traditional number nine with size who can give you a target forward kind of role, but he's got quick feet. So they're starting to come through in waves now. There's also a number of players who've come out of Atlanta United's academy who have went on to college, and I could definitely see coming back as homegrown signings down the road. Probably the biggest name is Justin Garces, who's goalkeeper at UCLA. You know, with Brad Kazan in goal, you're not really in any need to sign a homegrown goalkeeper right now. You get a chance to go play for UCLA for 4 years. and then come back into the program could be a great fit. There's a lot of talent coming through, and that, I think, keeps everyone on their toes. It keeps the training sessions very good, and you see these guys, you know, get time training straight away. Luis Fernando has earned a contract from Atlanta United 2 this year. He was a player. He played last season with Richmond, came over to Atlanta, very versatile, and he signed an MLS deal and still playing at Atlanta United 2 at the moment, but he could factor in before the season's over.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Jason, listen, congratulations on the first Open Cup title for the club, obviously. I know you had a pretty good view of all the action at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. And if not during the playoffs, hopefully next year, I want some Carvel ice cream from Arthur Blank, if you don't mind.
You got to come get the Carvel at the Benz, my friend.
Oh, listen, I can get Carvel anytime where I am. Are you kidding me? Carvel is king in New York. I can go anywhere I want. I was shocked that Arthur, who, of course, he's a native New Yorker, was able to get a Carvel franchise inside the stadium.
The story was great. Yeah, the story was great.
Awesome.
I'm glad they told that on the broadcast. It is a highlight of the press box, that's for sure. People get very excited when they see the Carvel ice cream machine in the press box. So you come in, you get a great meal, you get the three cheese macaroni and cheese that you always have to get when you come to the Benz. And then get some dessert with a Carvel, and you're good to go.
Oh, yes. Let me tell you something. I have to find – go on YouTube and type up original Carvel TV commercials. You'll hear the old man talking. That might be him, but Mr. Carvel, that might be him. Yeah, you're participating on Carvel ice cream dealers. Fudgy the Whale and all those other fun things. But have a good night, Jason. I'll talk to you again soon. Take care and congratulations again.
Thanks for having me on.
No problem at all. Jason Longshore, 92.9 FM, The Game, soccer down here. Of course, the radio analyst for Atlanta United. And I ran a little longer, but I wanted to get something out there. And you know what? Got to give Atlanta credit. They are really, really striving to be a top side. So here we go as we discuss quickly the qualifying first round for the 2020 U.S. Open Cup. Now, there's going to be three regions right now, East, Central, and West. In the East, these are the clubs that are getting a first round bye for the 2020 U.S. Open Cup qualifying. The New York Pan-Cyprian Freedoms, United German Hungarians, Christos FC, and Virginia United. And going on, starting it off, here are the first round fixtures in qualifying in the East. Kendall Wanderers taking on Safira FC. Juve Pro Soccer taking on Brockton FC United in the Boston region. In the New York, New Jersey region, Clifton Elite FC will host Lansdowne Yonkers, Lansdowne Boys of Yonkers, New York. CSA Westchester hosting the Jackson Lions FC of Jackson, New Jersey. In the Philadelphia region, Danuba Swabian hosts West Chester United. Ukrainian Nationals hosting Vereniging Erzgebirge. If I can only pronounce that damn name, that's okay. In the D.C., Virginia, Maryland area, Federal City Wanderers hosts Izzy Auto FC. Soka hosts World Class Premier Elite FC. FC Millennium International hosts CD Juateras. Steel Pulse FC hosts Tartan Devils Oak Avalon. That's also Western Pennsylvania. Steel FC hosts Germantown City FC. Dorados FC hosts Alianza Football Club. In the Central region, Ann Arbor FC gets a bye. In the first round of the Central in Michigan, Livonia City FC hosts Wayne County Sporting and they will face the and that will be the match where the winner will face Ann Arbor FC. In the Dallas region, Lone Star Republic hosts Innocence Football Club. North Texas Rayados hosts FC Fort Worth SC. In the Central Texas region, Coyotes FC hosts San Antonio Runners. Celtic Cowboy Premier hosts Central Texas Lobos. In the Florida region, Atletico Miami FC hosts Miami United Under-23s. The Florida Soccer Soldiers return to take on Red Force FC. And then you have Hurricane FC hosting International Soccer Association. Deportivo Lake Mary against Orlando FC Wolves. In the rest of the Central region, you have Athletic Key FC hosts Houston FC. Louisiana Crew, K-R-E-W-E FC, hosts North Shore United. Club Atletique, now that's from Atlanta, A-T-L in the capital, Etic with lowercase, hosts the Georgia Revolution Reserves. Charleston United hosts Soda City Sorenex FC. Springfield FC hosts Nashville United. And in the West, from the Colorado area, Colorado Rush hosts Club El Azul. Athletic Club of Sloan's Lake hosts Azteca FC. Low Girones. Denver Soccer Club hosts Colorado Rovers. FC Denver hosts FC Boulder Harpos. GAM United FC, that's capital G, lowercase AM, hosts FC Union Juarez. Northern California section, Oakland Stompers against Contra Costa FC. Academica SC against PV United. ASA RWC hosts Olympic Club. Southern California Quickening hosts Cal FC. Oxnard Guerreros FC hosts Santa Monica United FC. The Los Angeles Monsters host Valley United SC. USA Soccer Stars FC hosts Alta California Soul. Newport FC hosts SC Trojans FL. And the rest, San Juan FC hosts IPS Marathon Taverna. Real San Jose hosts Outbreak FC. And finally, Chula Vista FC hosts Rebels Soccer Club. That starts the 2020 qualifying campaign. That's the first round on the weekend of Saturday, September the 21st, and Sunday, September the 22nd. This should be a lot of fun. This should be exciting. And we will update all the scores in qualifying for the Open Cup on the regular 40 Scenes Fire American Soccer Shows. Tonight, I want to thank my guests. I want to thank Bruce McGuire from Denord on Minnesota United. And I also want to thank Jason Longshore from 92.9 FM, The Game, in Atlanta, Georgia, as Atlanta United defeats Minnesota United FC by final, once again, of 2-1 this past Tuesday evening at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Once again to ESPN, a brilliant job, a fantastic job of broadcasting the U.S. Open Cup. More coming our way in the following years. Let's have another fun round. Let's have another fun edition in 2020. My name is Daniel Feuerstein. Join me on Tuesday night after Labor Day as I will have on another fantastic show on American soccer. Once again, thanks to Bruce McGuire and thanks to Jason Longshore. This is Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you very much for listening to me tonight. And as always, please enjoy your football. Thank you. Have a good evening, everyone. Take care. So long, and bye-bye for now.